B-Pod Studios.
I'm just trying to spell it out for the listener.
Felger and Mav.
S-T-O-O-P-I-D.
T-E-P-I-D.
B-O-B.
Boob.
Isn't that Bob?
Felger and Mav.
Q-U-I-T quick.
Okay, thank you. No, spell up for me too. I'm an idiot.
98.5 The Sports Hub.
This week is going to get really ugly. I still think at the end of the day, after all the consternation, after all of the fighting that's about to happen, that both parties recognize that being out on the field is better than the alternative. But to get there, there are a lot of things that they have to do to figure out first to try and get there. Chief among them, the financial aspect, and of course you can't look past the health and safety aspect either. And those are two absolute whoppers to have to deal with before the players actually get to go to spring training 2.0 in the middle of June.
Tony Clark tells The Athletic, a system that restricts player pay based on revenues is a salary cap. The league's trying to take advantage of a global health crisis to get what they failed to achieve in the past. So, hey, there's a solid one to start on.
Here's the thing. Let's not let it be sadness. Let's let this be reality. This week's going to suck. Like, it just is. But at the beginning of any negotiation, when you've got two Rams that are willing to butt heads like that, that's what this is. You get it out of the way now, you get the positions that are too extreme off the table, and then you make a deal. Let's try and ride this one out as smoothly as possible, knowing that in order for a deal to happen eventually, you have to have this at the beginning because it's going to provide the foundation ultimately for them to meet in the middle.
So that's Jeff Passan on ESPN. I don't know if I'm willing to ride it out because the players' union's already bugging me, Maz. And real quickly, just to set the stage, so the Major League Baseball owners have presented a proposal to the players. But before the proposal could even get to the players, there was pushback from players and their executive director, Tony Clark, and Scott Boras. Basically, the plan is calling for a revenue share for the rest of the way in baseball. When they come back and play their 82-game schedule, whatever is made, they want to split 50-50 with the players. So the players had already agreed to prorate their salaries based on the number of games played. Now the owners are saying not just a proration, but we're going to pay you based off of the revenues that are actually made. And that has caused, again, the people's on the players' side to push back strongly. Scott Boras, headline, Scott Boras urges MLB players to reject owners' latest proposal. Quote, the players I represent are unified in that they reached an agreement and they sacrificed anywhere from 30 to 40% of their salaries so that the games could amicably continue, said Boras. The owners represented during that negotiation that they could operate without fans in the ballpark. Based on that, we reached an agreement, and there will not be a renegotiation of that agreement, said Boras. Said MLBPA Executive Director Tony Clark to The Athletic, quote, a system that restricts player pay based on revenues is a salary cap, period. This is not the first salary cap proposal our union has received. It probably won't be the last. That the league is trying to take advantage of a global health crisis to get what they've failed to achieve in the past and to anonymously negotiate through the media for the last several days suggests they know exactly how this will be received. Again, said Tony Clark. What's your reaction to this, Mass?
Okay, so look, I would tell you that over the years, baseball owners and players, okay, and I'm lumping them all together for the moment, baseball owners and players over the years have gone to some extraordinarily low levels, yeah, extraordinarily low depths to get their arguments across and their petty little bitching about who makes more or who should make more. This is a new low. Okay, I personally believe that this is a new low, that in the midst of a pandemic with people losing jobs like nobody's business and the unemployment rate probably about to go over 20%. Again, over 30 million people are now out of work in the United States as a result of this thing, and these guys are bitching about the money. Now, I happen to put more onus on the Players Association and the union than I do on the ownership because I happen to believe that what we're going through at the moment is extremely unique and requires unusual sacrifice. Okay, that is my personal belief of what is going on in the world and what is required upon people in the business world to make their operations and make the system work. And it feels to me like the baseball players are adhering to a quote-unquote agreement that they had with the owners, and I say quote-unquote agreement because I think there is some gray area as to whether or not they were agreed that they were going to play before fans. I think the fact that the players are sticking on that point and then going public with it is an embarrassment. I think it's a disgrace, and it's stuff like this that makes me wish the sport dies.
To me, it's the players look like such jackasses. I think the players look so much worse in this. Murray, you have a thought, though, first?
Yeah, I do, too. And if their main argument is, well, we're the ones taking all the risk, sorry to sound cold here, but given the age of most of the players and their overall health and how they take care of themselves and how they're, you know, what they're putting in their bodies, you know, to maintain the ability to play Major League Baseball and play professional sports, I'm sorry. Like, I don't have much sympathy for you. If you caught it, I think you're going to be fine.
Yeah, to me, it's just the tone. It's just the tone. I mean, everyone's taking a pay cut, like in the country, in the world. Everyone's taking some sort of cut or some sort of financial sacrifice. And so the players claim they've already done it on that proration. But on top of that, the owners are now saying, rightfully, I think, that our revenue's not going to be the same. So just playing you the proration of 80 games isn't going to do it because we're not going to make those the revenues in 80 games that we normally would. So
exactly.
So we can't pay you what we normally would, which is, I think, a reasonable position that is certainly negotiable. But for the players, for them to say, and for like Tony Clark to strike that tone, that's a salary cap, period. They've been asking that. They've been demanding that of us for years. They're not going to get it now. Like, to immediately bring up past negotiations, like this is just another ploy on the part of the owners, is so freaking gross and so defensive and so, like, tone deaf. It is beyond me, Maz. Their tone, it's the tone that I find offensive. It's frankly offensive.
It is offensive. It's insulting.
I mean, if you want to, you know, say publicly that we all believe this is an important time and a delicate time, and we're going to do our best to work with the owners to find an amicable decision. You don't have to say yes to their first offer. I'm not asking you to do that. But to immediately come out and say, well, that's a salary cap, period. It's not the first time they've given us a salary cap proposal, and it won't be the last. These guys have been trying to scam us for years. We're not going to fall for it. They're just using the pandemic as an excuse to try and ram the salary cap down our throats, and we're not going to take it. We already negotiated. We're not going to negotiate again with them. They're just trying to... that's the whole tone. It's like, dude.
Yeah, it shows an immediate unwillingness to even budge or negotiate at all by talking like that.
Tony.
Oh, totally.
Scott, there's a pandemic. So, you know, as Maz said, most everyone that is reading that has taken some sort of pay cut or some sort of hit. In some cases, major, major financial hits. And you're going to come out and say, well, we're not taking a salary cap. Oh, F you. Seriously. F you and your salary cap. Don't you understand? This is a little bit of a different circumstance this time. But immediately they get their backs up and take that super militant, super, you know, defensive union player baseball union stance. Like this is 1994 or some other regular year. Like, how tone deaf do you have to be to come out and take that tone, Maz?
Oh, because, Mike, you know, baseball players have been mistreated. Don't you know?
Oh.
I mean, really. Now, look, you want to go back into the 60s and no free agency and baseball in the pre-free agency era? Fine. Again, no problem. Totally different argument. But does anybody realistically look at it over the last, I don't know how many years, 30, 40, however many you want? Okay, let's draw the line wherever you want. Does anybody look at it at that period of time and say, boy, those baseball players really get screwed, don't they?
Jesus.
Like, when is the last time someone said that? Or that actually happened? They get their backs up. They immediately go to war over it. And honestly, I think Tony Clark's in over his head. I think the guy's a clown. I hear this response, and it tells me the guy really doesn't have a clue. He should have some understanding as to what's going on. And even if the owners are leaking stuff to the media, don't play the game. Don't. Negotiate tough behind the scenes. Don't give me all the rhetoric out in public. You look like a bunch of jerks right now. They really do. The players look like a complete bunch of jerks.
Oh, my God. Only these guys could get me to root for the owners. This is the only group capable of getting me to root for billionaire owners. But they've done it. When Scott Boras says, we reached an agreement, and there will not be a renegotiation of that agreement. It's like, Scott, there's a freaking pandemic. No one knows what it's going to look like in 2 months. What do you mean there's no... So, like, that tone is so gross. Tony Clark says the league is trying to take advantage of a global health crisis to get what they've failed to achieve in the past. So, like, he's already blaming them for losing negotiations in the past. Like, Tony... What they're not trying to implement a permanent salary cap. They're just trying to figure out this year because this year is a little different. Oh my God, their tone is just so gross.
It is. It's insulting. And I'll tell you, look, I don't know whether a lot of fans, you know, typically follow these sorts of negotiations, and maybe they don't. And I don't blame them. But I think that it's this kind of rhetoric that really it just kills the sport. It kills. When I say kills, I mean that metaphorically. That people look at it and go, I don't want to hear this bull crap. I do not want to hear this bullcrap.
And I haven't heard it from the owners. I haven't heard this sort of stance from the owners. I mean, I know they're asking for it, but it's not like I have to listen or read this douchebag billionaire owner say, well, we're not renegotiating with them. I don't have to hear that from those guys. I'm hearing from the douchebags on the other side, though. God, can they get a clue? Can they get a clue for once?
So, Mike, the only owner that we have heard it from, and again, this is sort of through the grapevine, was Jeff Wilpon of the Mets through Cuomo in New York, right? When Cuomo said that he had a conversation and wanted sports to come back, and he talked to Jeff Wilpon, but, you know, that is contingent on the players being willing to take a pay cut.
Well, hold on, but that's Cuomo saying it, not Wilpon.
Okay, but again, but he cited Wilpon by name, which means Wilpon said it to Cuomo. Like, Wilpon shouldn't even be talking about it to Cuomo. I didn't like that either.
It's a private conversation. I mean, you're allowed to have that, and the players are allowed to fight for their rights, and I mean, I'm okay with that, but to strike that tone at this time, they get a clue.
Yeah, the players, I mean, the players really look like a bunch of a-holes in this thing. They really do. And this is the one that makes you look at them and go, you know what, fine. You don't want to play, don't play. You don't get any money. And Murray, the part about their health and we're taking the risk, well, then which one is it? Because right now they're not talking about the risk. They're talking about the money. This has nothing to do with the risk.
But that's their backup and their go-to, and I find it to be a crock because it's really about the money.
It is. It's got nothing. So if it's about the risk and you don't want to take the risk, well, then fine. No games. That's it. Season's over.
My God.
Nobody plays. You don't get any money.
It's completely unprecedented times. It is a crisis across the country. And so the owners say we need to try something different this year. And the first thing I hear out of the players is, we're not renegotiating and we're not taking your salary cap. Nice try. Like, good God.
Spoiled.
Seriously. The worst. That group, the worst. So if you want to weigh in on that with our Brady conversation, by all means, back to your phones after this.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Felger and Maz.
Oh.
98.5. Sports Hub.
Let me just go to you. If you were an active player right now, what would your position on all of this be?
Well, these are unprecedented times. And first of all, Tony Clark is right. This is not the time for players to be backing down, other than the fact that this is a pandemic. So any other year, I'd be on the player's side. I would say, yes, don't back down, guys. But this year is different. And I think we have an opportunity as an industry to come together and understand that sacrifices are being made all around the nation, all around the world because of this pandemic. And as Jeff talked about, players could actually make more money as a percentage of revenue under this plan than they normally would. So 50-50 sounds like a very reasonable plan for the players to accept.
So that's Mark Teixeira there on ESPN breaking ranks, I guess. Good God.
I was surprised by that. Again, Teixeira was a Boris guy. I always felt he was a big union guy. I was surprised that he came out and said that, you know, because baseball players never do that. They never say, oh, yeah, we're dumb for doing it this way. This is stupid. It is very, very rare.
Okay. So, again, though, the first salvo from the players is just, my God, as you said, it really is another new low. Just when I thought they couldn't get any worse, the players' union goes and gets worse. We're not taking your salary cap. You've been trying to shove that down our throats for years. Nice try. Like, no recognition that it's a little different. It's a little bit of a different situation.
And clueless.
They're not asking to renegotiate the CBA. It's a one-off to get this half season in. And you go, you tried to get us to take that the last time. We're not taking it now. That's not what they're talking about, you idiots. They're trying to get 80 games in. Good God. Chris is in Worcester, has this on hold. Here's Joe in New York waiting patiently on Brady McDaniels. Go ahead, Joe.
Hey, guys. What I find most interesting about this story is that Brady vociferously denies the allegation that he had a deteriorating relationship with McDaniels. And he denies it by posting it on his Instagram story. He posts this, this story. And in doing so, he leaves it up there. It says right there, the talk of friction between Tom Brady and Bill Belichick was widespread during the end of his tenure in New England, but his frustration with the coaching staff may have gone beyond the head coach. Brady didn't feel any obligation to deny that whatsoever, and I think that his failure to deny that allegation about his resentment toward Bill Belichick is an indication that, you know, he's fine to let people think that, and I think that's the biggest shot he's taken at Belichick since the divorce happened.
Well, I think there's been more subtle things, but I think that's fair to bring that up, that Brady never took to Instagram to deny the reports of him and Bill having a fissure, or, you know, him and Bill having an issue. He's never did that. He did it with Josh. And again, I think it's the same problem. I think his problem with Josh was really his problem with Belichick. Because if Belichick told McDaniels to listen to Brady on the game plan, McDaniels would have listened to him on the game plan. The reason McDaniels wasn't listening to Brady on the game plan and was marginalizing him, as some have reported, is because Bill told him to. And Brady knows it. So to me, that's why I think Brady's defensive of that. I think Brady's problems with McDaniels are his problems with Bill. Mary Manchester, what do you think?
So, Mike, I'm one of these people who became passionate about the Patriots because of the Belichick-Brady combination. So I guess my loyalties are a little divided right now because I do want Brady to win in Tampa. But I also wanted Belichick to outlast Brady. I always wanted him to pick the next guy, whether it's Sidham or someone else, so that he could take, you know, the franchise to the next generation and instill that winning culture. So as long as Belichick is still here, even in the short term, I'm fully invested in the team, and most people are. I think their popularity is going to withstand this.
Okay, I hope you're right. And oh, by the way, let me just, as we discuss that, you know, Patriots popularity thing, rooting for Brady in Tampa, I don't consider bad form. That's sort of that old school, passionate Boston sports vindictiveness, which is fine. That's cool. That's engagement in the sport and picking a side. And I'm less offended by that than I would be if the Patriots go 9, 10, 11 wins here with Jared Stidham, but aren't really a true Super Bowl contender, but have a really good competitive team, a really good competitive year, and that's what they become. But you tune out because it's not Tommy, and you're not winning Super Bowls every year. Like, that would just, that's what I'm talking about. Like, are we Pittsburgh? Are we Green Bay? Are we Chicago? Is a football team the passionate driver of the city, even though you're not winning Super Bowls every year? And is that still going to remain when you're not winning Super Bowls every year? That's what I'm becoming concerned with.
Yes. Look, if they're competitive and Stidham is pretty good, and I think those things go hand in hand, okay? I you're not going to get Brady again, but if you get yourself a B-level quarterback, a pretty good quarterback, I don't think you're going to see a major change here. Football will still rule.
What if you have a crappy quarterback and you win on defense? What if you just win? I mean,
as long as you're winning, you're not going to lose people.
Yeah.
I believe that.
So this is what I want. And this is why, again, I use Denver. I use Pittsburgh. I use Green Bay. Even though Green Bay's had their great quarterback for whatever, 30 years now, it really doesn't matter how those if those teams are winning, those teams are massive forces in their region. And they're just in the heartbeat and in the blood of the fans out there, and the support is just massive. And that's what we have now in New England. We've had it for 20 years with Tom Brady. if they become just a good team that's competitive, more, you know, Pittsburgh's a pretty good model. Like, that's, for the most part, they've been the Steelers the whole way. They don't win every year, and certainly they have their ups and downs, but they're generally a good team, a competitive team, a worthy product. Whether they have Ben Roethlisberger or Bubby Brister, they're still the Steelers in Pittsburgh. They're the force there. Is that what the Patriots are going to be in New England post Tom Brady? That's what I want. Or is it going to be, there's not Tom, it's just Jared Stidham, and they're 10-6, so,
You know. Oh, no. Yeah, I don't think you have to worry about that. Again, in the short term, there's going to be a Brady hangover. You know, you're going to get that. But long term, if they're good, there won't be an issue.
David in New Bedford on the baseball thing. Hi, David.
Yes, I agree with you guys. I agree on the owners. I think the players, makes baseball look bad when the players are doing this during the pandemic. And I think if they want to play baseball, they should just play baseball. Otherwise, they're going to lose money if they don't play at all.
So, look, I'm not telling the players just to take whatever the owners put in front of you. And, you know, I'm not saying that. You're allowed to negotiate and try and carve out what you think is fair. I just think, though, to take that immediate militant stance publicly, like the owners are trying to pull one over on you. Like this was 1967 or something, right? Like Kurt Flood, like, guys.
Totally.
You've gotten more than the fair, a fair end of the stick now for a long time, for a full generation. And this is a massively unprecedented situation. And everyone's just trying to work through it. So instead of just taking it on something approaching good faith, that you're going to have to work out something different and something new for everybody, for you immediately to get your back up and to go, oh, well, they're trying to get us to take that again. We're not going to take that. We're not renegotiating. It's just tone deaf. It's just tone deaf and makes you look like a bunch of douchebags. I hate to keep using that word, but really.
I mean,
really
to me.
No other word for it.
Yeah, there really isn't. No, again, you know, them being insulted by this is insulting. And I hate to put it in those terms. It's a freaking joke. Again, because what the owners are doing, hell, you have Mark Teixeira saying it, that what the owners are doing here by proposing a 50-50 is not that outrageous. And at the end of the day, look, I don't know if they will figure this out or not. I hope they do, because if something like this stands in the way of the game coming back, that's embarrassing.
Oh.
That is really, it's look, embarrassing, look. And I don't think they'll let it come to that, or I hope they don't, but with baseball, you can never rule it out.
If the owners were asking this in normal times, in the normal course of a CBA coming up, well, they're fine. You go to the mattresses, you go to war, and you're fine, like we're used to this. That I get, that's a labor battle. This is a totally unique situation, and they're trying to salvage as much as they can of their business for 80 stinking games. They're not asking you to rewrite the CBA. They're asking for an agreement, a special agreement for 80 games to get them through this half season and get as much as they can out of it. And you're going to take that stance? Like, again, they're asking you into, they're forcing you into indentured servitude. Like, it's 1967 again all over. Like, that is just ridiculous.
Oblivious.
Oh, my. Oblivious, Maz. Completely oblivious.
Really, again. And, you know, we're talking about a sport here where, you know, the average salary of the major league player is something like $4.5 million now. I mean, it's ridiculous.
The players have the right I'm sorry to cut you off. There's one thing that I've read that I am with the players on, and that is, if the owners want a 50-50 revenue split and they're going to split what's in the pie, then the owners should open up their books. And this is a totally reasonable ask on the part of the players. And this is the one thing I am on with the players, because the owners, I know, love to hide hidden revenue streams and they like to hide personal expenses that they write off as business expenses. And what exactly are your operating costs when you're flying Spalding private across the country? It's like, is that a team expense or is that a personal expense? And let's open up your books. If you're saying you're going to lose money in empty stadiums, fine, show us. Show us the numbers, show us your operating expenses, show us the line items, show us what's going on, and then we'll agree to, like, so the players are right to ask for that. I don't have a problem with that. But for them to start crying about, like, salary cap, that's not what they're asking for. They're asking for something different and creative for 80 games to try and salvage their business. So stand down a little bit. Just settle down, Scott.
I mean, really, again, like you said, to treat it like it's just another CBA negotiation, given what's going on, is asinine.
Okay, so
it's just asinine.
We have that. We'll reset our thoughts on the Brady McDaniel story after Murray's update. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Felger and Mass. Way more than just a sports talk radio show.
This truly is the apocalypse.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, resetting the Josh McDaniels, Tom Brady story. We spent a lot of time on that early on in the day with some developing opinions on it. Just to reset quickly, Gary Myers, longtime writer for the New York Daily News, now writes for The Athletic, among other places, tweeted out yesterday that one thing that has been very much overlooked in terms of Brady's divorce from the Patriots, one thing that's been very much overlooked, according to an excellent source, is his deteriorating relationship with offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels. Myers wrote that Tom was worn out by Josh after all these years. That surprised me. They made it seem like they were brothers fighting after sideline blowups, wrote Myers. But it was worse than that. Brady also wanted more input into the game plan. Also, he knew it was final season in New England and said when he didn't trust receivers, he didn't throw to them. That's a bad look. Patriots lacked reliable receivers other than Edelman. Then I guess he was getting blood by Patriots fans on Twitter because he didn't. It then followed up on Twitter and said, it's funny how things get misinterpreted. I was not being critical of Tom Brady at all when I reported about his deteriorating relationship with Josh McDaniels. After 6 Super Bowl rings and 9 Super Bowl appearances, is there anybody who doesn't think he's deserved major input into the game plan? Chris Gasper piled on and said, actually, Gary is dead on here. He tweeted this, Gary's dead on here. The professional personal relationship between Brady and McDaniels was more strained than publicly portrayed, a source told me, said Gasper. Brady found it frustrating that Josh wouldn't install plays TB12 wanted in the game plan last season. It felt like a phasing out. And of course, coming on top of all this was Tom Brady himself, who, reprinted something from Pro Football Talk that was just really Gary Myers' tweets, where Tom Brady then put on his Instagram story, please stop this nonsense. Please be more responsible with reporting. 19 years together and brothers for life at Real Josh McDaniels. So, Maz, what are your developing opinions on this story?
So here's what I now believe about what happened with the Patriots last year. Because we all know that they lack talent. We all know they had injuries on the offensive line. And I say lack talent at the skill positions. And we know that, obviously, there was an issue between the quarterback and the coach. And up until now, I have operated under the premise that Brady wasn't the real problem. Those other things were far bigger deals. But I will tell you now is that what I believe is that Tom Brady was as big a problem as anything else. And when I say Brady was a problem, I mean his attitude. Okay, his attitude. Brady's unwillingness to sort of work within the framework of what the team was at that particular point in time. As frustrated as he was, and in some ways rightfully so, I think undermined the operation on some level. And the fact that they didn't achieve their heights or their ceiling as a group, be it the individual development of the young players and then also the group performance. To me, Brady was as big a part of that as anyone else or anything else. And his unwillingness to buy in and set aside his ego and his own selfish wants was a significant problem, as big a problem as anything else.
Well, again, so what led you in this story to believe that? Why are you going back to Brady here and not McDaniels?
Okay, because Mike, if you look at the relationships that we now believe were fractured, the Brady and the receivers, Brady and the head coach, now Brady and McDaniels. The one common denominator in all of that is Brady. Brady was having problems with everyone. So we can look at Bill and say, yeah, Bill's a pill. Of course, that's who he is. But Brady also had a problem clearly with the offensive coordinator. He was having a problem connecting with his receivers. To me, Brady was in the middle of the whole thing. He's the common denominator.
So I agree. Most of it spun from Brady, and so I agree with that. And I think that, I co-sign on the take. I think there was an intangible missing from the team by the end of the year is what caused them to underachieve, which is what it was. Losing at home, Murray, and again, I know you say the team got what it deserved, which, you know, like, on the face of it is fair. I mean, when you play that poorly, you deserve to lose. But the point is, They had enough talent to beat Miami at home in Week 17 and win a playoff game at home. And they couldn't put it together because the quarterback had 1 foot out the door and things had sort of fallen apart in his orbit. And that's what happened to that team last year. And I think that, you know, so if you want to say Brady was part of the problem, in that respect, I think it was. The fact that he was gone was part of the problem with the team.
Yeah, I mean, look, he was part of the problem last year, but I'm not going to put the overrated defense and their performance in that last game of the regular season on Brady. I'm sorry. I just don't think that that has anything to do with him and his bitchiness behind the scenes. I think that this stemmed, though, yesterday, this report, and it's something that Jimmy had been reporting since last year, that there was this friction between McDaniels and Brady, is that Brady looked at McDaniels as the buffer, you know, someone he could trust and talk to. And because, you know, I don't think he didn't really want to deal with Bill here these last couple of seasons. And Josh here, this last season, was more a Bill guy than a Tom guy. And that's where that friction came from.
I think that's true. And, you know, as I said earlier, I think Brady's problems with McDaniels were really his problems with Bill. Because I think McDaniels was just following orders. I think the team at the end got a little tired of Brady not showing up in the offseason, sort of being tough on those young receivers or not trusting those young receivers. And also they felt this guy's got 1 foot out the door. So why are we going to give him equity in the offense? Why are we going to give him a say in what's going on here? So no, we're not going to do that. And so that started with Bill. And if Bill had said to Josh McDaniels, yeah, take Tom Brady's input into the offense and run his plays, Josh would have done it. But Bill said just the opposite. He said, he's no longer a shareholder here. So, you know, Tom, you just play. Coaches coach, players play. That came from Bill. And Josh was just following those orders. So, again, I think Brady's problems with Josh were his problems with Bill.
Okay, and again, I'm not necessarily disagreeing with that either, because at the end of the day, McDaniels is a coach. He works for Bill, and his job is to get the most out of the talent that he can. But if Brady is not cooperating, I can understand why McDaniels, like Bill, would get frustrated with Brady. And so my only point is this. For the first time, I am starting to wonder if the offense will perform more efficiently now that Brady is gone. And when I say perform more efficiently, I am not predicting that the Patriots will finish with more wins. I'm not even predicting that they're going to score more. What I'm telling you is that the offense with Stidham at quarterback will run more smoothly and will hit its ceiling, even if that ceiling is lower than it was with Brady. Has a better chance of hitting that ceiling than it did last year because Brady's attitude was a problem.
Okay, so that's Maz's developing opinion. I have one on the fans' denial. The continued state of denial of what was going on there in Foxborough over the last couple of years and the sourcing of Meyer's story. We'll get to those right after these words in our long commercial-free segment.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Sports. Boston's home for sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub.
You know, since that has come out and since Tom has denied it, I've gotten several texts from people that I really trust who told me that I'm 100% correct on this and to stand strong on it because they know it to be true as well. I first heard this a few weeks ago, but I felt like I needed to get it confirmed. I try not to go, unless it's really imperative, with single sources. So once I got a confirmation on everything that I had heard a couple of weeks ago, I felt it was appropriate to do this. And I did it like in a series of three tweets yesterday because I just didn't want to throw this out there in 240 characters or whatever. I wanted to try to give it a little context, and I felt I did that. So I'm sure it's true. And I have a really good relationship with Tom. He was incredibly helpful to me when I did my Brady Manning book. I've had a good relationship with him since that point. I'm not the least bit surprised that he denied it. I didn't expect him to confirm it. I thought maybe he wouldn't say anything. But I also think I do think he likes Josh. I'm not saying they hate each other. I'm just saying last year the relationship deteriorated as the Patriot offense struggled. So the fact that Tom came out and denied it, it doesn't bother me in the least. I've been doing this for a very long time. And if you run scared because you think the story you're going to put out there is going to be denied, then basically you don't belong in this business. So I have thick skin, and I've been getting hammered on Twitter by all the Patriot fans, and that's fine. People do forget that from day one I defended Tom on Deflategate. I do like him very much, you know, so this wasn't a personal thing, and I'm not even blaming him for this. I'm just reporting what happened.
So that was Gary Myers on today with Zolak and Bertrand. Catch that on the app or our website, 985thesportshub.com, for the full replay of that. It's a good spot. And the little piece of that cut that got me was he's getting hammered on Twitter by Patriots fans, which to me, it just amazes me. It's like, you folks are still fighting this fight. Don't you understand? It's all real. All the crap that was going on behind the scenes that was being reported that you denied is actually real. And you know how it's real, right? I mean, Tom Brady's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. So why are you still fighting this fight? Why are you still in denial? Like, really? You're going to go at Gary Myers? Oh, you're just making it up. Really? When Tom Brady walked out on you and became a Tampa Bay Buccaneer, you're still fighting that fight? It blows me away, Maz. Why can't fans acknowledge that there were issues there and they drove Tom Brady out of town and they got divorced? It's like, why are you still fighting that fight? I don't get it.
Yeah, because Felger, he's perfect, Felger. That's why. It's asinine. Of course it's asinine. It's this whole attitude of like, you know, we played that bit at the end of the show yesterday. Did you know Tom Brady doesn't poop? but that's what it is. And the idea that somehow people can't get that through their thick heads. At the end, they were done with each other. They were done.
I mean, it's just like a default. You're going to defend the wall. You attack these reporters who are attacking the Patriots. Like, when they're right, when they're accurate, when all that stuff that was being reported has largely been proven to be true, and you know it to be true because Tom Brady walked out on you. He walked out. He left. He quit. He got out of here and brought his buddy Gronk with him. And you're still going to go after reporters who say there were issues internally? Oh, you're just making it up. Like, really? After Tom Brady walks out the door on you, you're still going to do that? It blows me away.
Yeah, but it's indicative of a bigger picture issue, and that's that people only want to accept news that they want to accept, you know? So, and when Brady takes to Instagram last night and, you know, and I'm using air quotes here, debunks that story, now that's where people get to say, see, you were making it up. This was all a crock. And then they start chirping him on Twitter and social media.
How can it all be a crock if Brady walked out on you and went to Tampa Bay, the worst brand in pro sports? That's what he was. He only had one real good offer, and he took it. And he took it. And you're still going to say, well, you're just making it up.
Like, and he just wanted to change, Mike. It was, you know, they separated amicably. Everything was fine.
Oh, my God. Like, that is, to me, it's like, give it up. Give it up already.
And the fact that, you know, you raise a good point, too, because there were even a wave of people that once Gronk went there, came over. And I say came over to the side where we believe that what happened was that obviously there were problems internally. The Gronk thing was a bag job, and everybody knows it. So the fact that there would still be people on the other side to me after Gronk happened, it's hard to believe. It really is. It's hard to believe. It's hard to believe that they felt that way even after Brady went over. But then Gronk goes too, and you know, we have sources or even Drew Rosenhaus, Gronkowski's agent, saying basically, yeah, once Tom ended up in Tampa, Gronk wanted to come back and play. Like, you know, once he was out of Foxborough and away from Bill, Gronk was willing to go back and team up with Brady again because he wasn't playing for Belichick anymore. The idea that people still needed to be hit over the head with it is mind-numbing.
Right. Do you need to be pounded over the head with a baseball bat to get it through your skulls? There were issues. Brady left. He left because of them. He's not still here. He's not still here. If he had re-signed, maybe you'd have a little bit of a case to say, see, you just made it up. You're all exaggerating it. No, they were fine. Like, you'd at least have that, but he left. So once he leaves, you're still going to do that thing? Like, give it up. Let that one go. Let it go. The Palace Q was real. It was real, and you know it because Tom Brady is a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. He's a Buccaneer. Now, like, Brady and McDaniels, are they okay with each other personally? I mean, maybe. I do believe that Brady's problems with McDaniels are really his problems with Belichick because McDaniels was just following Belichick's lead. I do think that Belichick started to marginalize Brady and sort of edge him out, but I think Brady started it by not fully engaging in the offense, not showing up in the offseason, not showing trust in his young teammates and the people around him. Brady had one foot out the door, and so Bill sort of edged him all the way out the door, and Josh just followed the suit of his boss. He just followed the lead of his boss, Belichick. So I think Murray put it well. Maybe Brady had, you know, for a while had come to consider McDaniels a buffer, like the good cop, bad cop. And McDaniels was the guy that he could rely on to work with and be treated well by. And that was sort of that buffer. But here at the end, Bill said, you know, screw it. And Josh just again started following the lead of his boss. And so now Brady turned on McDaniels too.
He lost him. Right.
But I mean, if you don't think that stuff was going on, I don't know what to tell you. Why do you think Brady's in Tampa? Oh, so why would you attack a reporter on Twitter who's just reporting more stuff of what went on last year and what led to the divorce? And that's not made up because the divorce happened. He walked out on you. And you're still going to blow the reporters just as like a default? My God, find a new, like, this is like, that became such a part of the Patriots experience. It sort of bothered me. It's like so much a part of the Patriots experience is just crying about what people say about you on Twitter and in the media. Like, so now Brady's gone and you're still doing it?
Like, yeah, because Mize is from New York. He's the enemy. He doesn't like the Pats.
Why don't you just follow the team and become a football fan versus just crying about what people are writing about you and saying about you in the media? Like, good God, get over that one. Especially since it turned out to be true. It turned out to be the case that there were real issues there and it led to a divorce that none of us saw coming. And I will admit it, it turns out. And look, I was willing to believe everything. I believed in the Palace Q and all that reporting, but it turns out I underplayed it too. It turns out I didn't fully appreciate how bad it was. I didn't realize how bad it was because I thought at the end Brady would cave. And that at the end of the day, after all these sides, Brady, Belichick, McDaniels, all these guys, mother bleeping each other behind the scenes for years, when push came to shove, they'd cave and they'd all, you know, reunite and come back and work together because it feels like how this happens. Belichick got abused for years by Parcells, and he always came back. McDaniels has been abused for years now by Belichick. He comes back. Nick Caserio gets abused for years by Belichick, gets treated like dirt. He came back. Brady gets treated like dirt. He's going to come back. I thought he was going to come back. I didn't realize how bad it was. I didn't realize how real it was. So, in that respect, I'm like you. But when someone reports something I don't like, it's not like, oh, neener, neener, neener. You're not, well, you're just making it up. Really? You're still at that. You're still doing that. After all that's transpired, that blows me away. That's one thing. So that's one takeaway. The other is the sourcing, which I'll get to quick. And we'll do your phones, I promise, all next hour after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials here.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.